The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Danny Higgins in for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. Hope Kelly's having a good holiday week with family. By the way, this hour brought to you by Starbucks. It's the season to come together over your holiday favorites at Starbucks. Warm up with a creamy caramel brulee latte. Get festive with an iced gingerbread chai or share a velvety peppermint mocha. Together is the best place to be at Starbucks. Wow, those aren't easy to say. Iced gingerbread chai, caramel brulee latte. Good God. Peppermint mocha.
Peppermint mocha.
Enjoy. We had tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody. This is from Win One for Drew. Hypothetical survivor question. Of the 10 entries remaining, if there was a chop and one person had two of the 10 entries, does he get two slots since he had two of the 10? Well, it would all be based on negotiation, but you would obviously assume that the person with two would get somewhere around double the share. Yes, but all based on negotiation. Perhaps one of his entries is not positioned as well as others, so there's things to discuss. But by the way, all 10 are owned by 10 different people. As far as investments are concerned, someone might be involved in more than one, but as far as the original purchases, 10 different people. Dukes in the PNW. Your discussion yesterday, regarding your discussion, Gil, on correlated parlays with the Vikings-Lions, which could adjust the Lions, which could adjust the line in the Packers-Ravens game. Yes, what I was saying was that if the Lions lose to the Vikings on Christmas, the Packers will clinch a playoff berth, and their line against the Ravens might very well adjust because the Packers would then at that point only be playing for seeding, and they're so banged up, who knows how they would choose to play that game. He says, if you have that conviction, what about this? Could you correlate the... Oh, yes, you absolutely could. He said, if the Ravens lose on Saturday... Ravens play on Saturday, right?
Yeah. Yes.
If they lose on Saturday, could you correlate that with the Browns spread dropping because of the Steelers clinching? Yes, absolutely, Dukes. Great, great call. These are the kinds of correlated things you have to sort of be aware of here now in the final couple weeks of the season. Judd O'Connor, most laughable moment last night was seeing Philip Rivers' small army of a family take up a whole suite to watch Dad play. The Monty Python skit comes to mind. With that many kids. Yeah, that was amusing, I guess. Oh, there's Philip Rivers' family. And all you saw was like the silhouettes of a million people in there.
Bet you they can get a full 7-on-7 for like Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, man. What's he got?
Turkey game.
10 kids?
I think it's 10.
All with his wife, Danny. All with his wife. I think Pete Futak might have a Philip Rivers story to share with us. Pete Futak joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K. He is the emperor of collegefootballnews.com. Here to talk college football with us. But let's start with Philip Rivers. How you doing, Pete? Happy holidays.
I do have a Philip. First of all, happy holidays. How you doing? And yes, of course, I have a Philip Rivers story. First of all, in your survivor pool talk, I am the person you want in survivor pools. I'm the one who gets like, I lose immediately. I'm the person I've never gotten like even out of the starting gate. I seem to always lose those types of things. I am so bad at that. And my Phil Rivers story is I have been doing this so long. If it's way lost. And Phil Rivers started as a true freshman at North Carolina State. And he set like accuracy records, like all time accuracy records. And NC State was pumping him out to everyone. I interviewed him like 3 times when he was 17. And now he's got, like you said, like 19 kids, and he had another one during the game last night. I mean, he's just this old dude now with a big gut, and just this old guy now. It's hilarious to watch.
The gut was something to watch, right? The blue was not slimming last night. Let's put it that way. Wait, but you had Philip Rivers fantasy football. What? I know no one likes to hear about other people's fantasy football leagues, but happened?
No,
in yours?
I mentioned before. So I'm going to say out of the millions and millions of leagues, I'm in the only one whose playoff last night, fortunately didn't happen to me, was decided on that last play by Philip Rivers throwing the pick six and then getting benched. He needed to get the 300 yards, and I have a big league, for the guy who's had the best team in my league to win that game. All he needed to do on that last drive, and it looked like it was fait accompli, he was rolling, everything was all good. He just needed to get one more completion, and he lost because pick six, Got the ball back. Riley Laird comes out. Guy loses because of three passing yards.
Yeah. Troy Aikman pointed it out, though, man. Ty Warren telegraphing that pass by just sitting on it and just being like, here, pass me the ball. Don't look at me, D. Winters. D. Winters was all over it. And that was that. Yeah. As you said, benched for Riley Leonard in the last drive, four and out for Riley Leonard, who must be like, with all of this, Riley Leonard must be like, to hell with all of you, right? That must be his attitude on all this. And the thing with the Rivers...
Well, not to get off the topic right away, but does Indianapolis have to go draft a quarterback this year? I mean, like, there's a deep quarterback draft. If Leonard's not it, and Richardson doesn't seem to be it, and Daniel Jones is still hurting, like, they need another... Like, Philip Rivers has kids. Indianapolis might have to have quarterbacks.
It's a good point. It's a good point. Let me just ask you, but let's go to college football. Let's talk about the trio. We have a trio of bowl games today. We have a game tomorrow. The most lonely sporting event there ever is the Christmas Eve game in Hawaii, this one between Hawaii and Cal. Today we have a trio of bowls. Louisville playing early this morning, Southern Miss, Western Kentucky, then Ohio and UNLV. Any plays on any of these four? Do you lean any which way?
Yeah, you know, first of all, this has been the worst bowl season I can ever remember. Every game's awful. I mean, forgetting the playoffs for a second, every bowl game is either low scoring between two bad teams, so even if it's one score at the end, it's kind of boring to get there, or else they're just annihilations. And couple of the two annihilations so far has been the Power Four team over the Group of Five, where the Group of Five team just didn't even show up, and the Power Four team cared, and it was just a blowout. So combine the Power Four versus Group of Five thing, and the team usually loses its coach gets rocked. That didn't happen yesterday. And another anomaly where Washington State showed up and Utah State didn't get off the bus. So I kind of like Louisville today. They're giving away a lot of points. Toledo always fights. Toledo lost everybody. They lost his head coach to UConn, Jason Candle. Louisville should be relatively full. Louisville right out of the gate today should be all right. It's again, a big number in a bowl game. But again, so far the Power Four teams are rocking. UNLV, you want to talk about a mess? Ohio with this Brian Smith situation as its head coach.
Yeah.
They should run the ball. It should be a high-scoring game. 66.5 is a lot of points, and so far this bowl season, the totals have been low, but it should be a high-scoring game. But I do like UNLV today. And then you mentioned, like you said, the loneliest game ever. Cal-Hawaii is going to just blow up off the charts. I mean, it's only 52.5 the last time I looked. Nick Rolovich and this Cal offense is going to just keep throwing and throwing and throwing some more. Hawaii always throws the ball. That should be a fun game. I don't really like it one way or another with Hawaii being the favorite, but I do think that's going to go over.
I don't usually chime in on random college football games with my handicapping opinion on some of these, but I do think it's worthwhile to note, like this Boca Raton Bowl, which is the first of the three today, Louisville and Toledo. It is like the poster child of why handicapping these bowl games is so difficult to me. It is just a Louisville. No Isaac Brown, no Kewan Brown. They're running backs, the Brown brothers, if you will. No Rene Conga, no Wesley Bailey on their defensive line. Then you know, Toledo, which had a great defense this year, but no Malachi Davis on their defensive line, no Braden Owis in their secondary, no Chris D'Apollonia, their linebacker. Those guys are
no
like,
coach,
no coach, no starting quarterback, right? Tucker Gleason. Yep. Let's start there.
Yep.
No D coordinator, no code D coordinator. You take a game like that and you're like, how, what am
we're
I supposed
guessing.
To do with this? Yeah. What I,
that's so, guessing.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You're hoping for, again, the way to do this is to come up with a plan and stick with it. And again, for me, it's when in doubt, go with the team that has to replace its coach. And when in doubt, go with the Power Four team that has its stuff together. Like, again, you know, Washington was relatively together. Boise State was together. Didn't matter. Washington was just better. NC State had everything together, came out hot right away. And there was just no hope for East Carolina on the other side. But again, you flip it. Yesterday, Washington State had nothing. Washington State had its quarterback, but lost everyone else, lost the head coach. Utah State was all back full, and this should have been, you know, Utah State. And again, Washington State looked like the A Bulls, and they came out rocking. I mean, we are guessing until we get to some of the bigger ones, until we know exactly what we're dealing with in terms of the opt-outs and stuff.
See, there is a but, though, to this, because I think that Southern Miss Western Kentucky game, though, then you can make an assessment, right? Because I think the players that Western Kentucky is losing that aren't playing today, that actually tips it to Southern Miss, I think, right? Harper Holloman. Nazir Ward,
exactly.
Dylan Flowers.
So Southern Miss lost its coach, right? So they lose Charles Huff to Memphis. But you're right, Western Kentucky kind of missing everyone. So it's, again, we're guessing. You're doing this for fun at this point, because it's like doing NFL preseason almost, when you're trying to figure out who's doing what with a lot of these teams. And so far, it's been relatively unpredictable, except, you know, even the college football playoff was relatively unpredictable when, you know, the all-timer with that, you know, 99-yard drive for James Madison.
the backdoor of all backdoor covers, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was wrong on every other. Like, the statistical anomalies with that game, Oregon hadn't given up 400 yards to anyone, even in all their blowout games this year. They gave up 500 to James Madison. No one had scored more this year on Oregon than James Madison, even though Oregon brought out the starters late. That was just as annoying as it gets. This is a tough bowl season so far. But again, hopefully as we move on, it'll get a little more true, because we'll be able to know a little bit better who's in and who's out.
All right, I'm gonna say Southern Miss, from my perspective, is the play of today and tomorrow. That's my opinion. Southern Miss.
That's a good one. Yeah. It's not crazy bad. UNLV would be my top one of the bunch.
Okay.
And the over on tomorrow's Hawaii game, at least in the terms of the next four.
We'll come back with Pete. We will obviously discuss the quarterfinals, the real games on the other side, and I am contractually obligated to ask him about Bobby Petrino at UNC, how that will work out next.
And I have the play of the bowls that I do have not locked down for you.
Okay, coming back. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make the holidays unforgettable with Omaha Steaks. From holiday roast to hand-selected gift packages, Omaha Steaks delivers top-quality meals and memorable gifts that bring everyone together. Every steak is perfectly aged and hand-carved for exceptional flavor. And right now, as a VSiN exclusive, you get 16 free smash burgers with any order of $129 or more, plus $50 off site-wide. Visit omahasteaks.com/VSIN. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. You can scan that QR code to learn more as well. I got a box from Omaha Steaks in the mail. It was downstairs. I was like, do I have a package or something? They're like, oh, yeah, so you have something in the refrigerator. I have been eating the contents of that box for the last 4 or 5 days.
What's your favorite thing out of the box?
So I've had burgers, potatoes au gratin. How you pronounce it? There was also Frankfurters, and there was, in addition to the fillets, those actual fillets, there was also desserts, caramel, apple dessert.
I like that. Send some desserts.
The desserts are the winner so far.
Yeah.
I've not had the steaks. I've had everything else.
Okay.
But the desserts are fantastic. Omaha Steaks. Check it out. Pete Futak, kind enough to join us once again to talk college football with us. Before we get to the quarterfinals here, Pete, UNC coming off a 4-8 season, first year under Bill Belichick and Michael Lombardi, have decided to go with Bobby Petrino as their new offensive coordinator. How's that going to work out, in your opinion?
Great. The guy's still got a good offensive mind. I mean, they didn't do anything offensive last year, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle because everyone was having so much fun dunking on Belichick. Their defense was fantastic over the second half of the season. They stayed in games. They just had nothing working offensively. Petrino's pretty good at this still. He still kind of knows what he's doing. You've got Belichick, so you got to win now. You're not on a 5-year plan with him, so you don't really need some young whippersnapper, up and coming 25-year-old offensive mind. So, all right, bring Petrino in there. Let's see what he does.
All right, let's get to the quarterfinals. New Year's Eve, We have the game again, the game where the East Coasters are, you know, the husband and wife or the boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever your significant other is arguing about having to go to a party. This one may run into that kind of debate because it starts at 7:30 Eastern. Miami and Ohio State, the 10-seed Hurricanes, committee got it right, Pete. They take down Texas A&M in a 10-3 game where you felt like Miami was going to blow this game. But they got it done at the end, missed three field goals, but their defense looked spectacular. They're at number, or excuse me, not at, because we're talking neutral fields now with bowls as opposed to the first round. They're going to play Ohio State. The Buckeyes are 9.5-point favorites still on this. Totals at 42.5. Does that seem like a lot of points to you?
A little bit. I mean, I picked Miami to win against Texas A&M. So they've got the talent. It's there. It's in terms of, you know, who could actually make a deep run and win this thing. There's only a couple teams that have that next level skill. They did this and Carson Beck didn't have to do anything. I mean, their game plan, they stayed with it. They said, we're not going to take any chances. We're going to trust our defense that A&M can't do anything. And turns out they were right. They got this thing to work. We still haven't seen Ohio State put it into fourth gear. And we still haven't seen them really stress test against and win a good game. I mean, the Texas game was a million years ago. Michigan's not that great. So who have they beaten that's really been that strong? They hadn't opened it up against Indiana in the Big Ten Championship. I think this is when they're going to have to start taking some chances. Like, Miami did not take, you know, Miami and Texas A&M just played, you know, small ball throughout that whole game. It was a fascinating game. Neither one showed up with the offense. I think Ohio State is going to do a little bit more to stretch that Miami defense than Texas A&M was going to do. So I think Ohio State gets those plays that Texas A&M, who was kind of overrated, couldn't. But you're right. I think that's a lot of points in a game like this. I don't see this being like some sort of 35-31 shootout. These two defenses are just too good.
All right. That's the Cotton Bowl. That's New Year's Eve. Then the trio of games on New Year's Day next week, beginning with the Orange Bowl between Oregon and Texas Tech. Oregon coming off what we just discussed. They crushed James Madison, but they let JMU in the back door for the cover. Much of the chagrin of many. So it's the 5-seed against the 4-seed here with Oregon, a slight favorite, a 1.5-point favorite. A lot of Texas Tech backers around these parts think the Red Raiders are the play here. You?
I've got a definitive take. This one, I am so 51-49. I mean, there's part of me that thinks that Oregon is just that good and is going to end up being this year's Notre Dame and find its way into the national championship. And there's the other part of me, it's like, wait a minute. Oregon struggled so much against Penn State. They struggled so much against Iowa. They lost to Indiana. They're very good, but in the top game, big games this year, they had a hard time putting them away, and or they lost the one big test that they really had to get past. And Texas Tech, okay, they beat BYU, and that's pretty much it. But they also stuffed a lot of pretty good teams in that Big 12. They held that Utah offense to nothing. I kind of like, very sheepishly like Texas Tech to win in a really close, really good game right out of the gate. They lose the next round, but I think they're going to have just enough of the tank. I think this defensive front for Texas Tech is the absolute real deal. I don't trust the offense quite enough, but this is going to be a back-and-forth fight in which should be a great day of games because we earned it after sitting through the rest of this bowl. I'm very sheepishly going with Texas Tech in this.
Sheepish play on Texas Tech for Pete. Middle child of the three games on New Year's Day, Alabama and Indiana at the greatest site there is, the Rose Bowl. With the Hoosiers, touchdown favorites.
It's if Indiana's not going to go in the tank like Oklahoma did, where Oklahoma had it, and then all of a sudden they had the missed pass play, the weird punt, Sean Landetta-esque punt play, punt drop, and then the pick six, and just totally lost their mojo. Indiana's not going to do that. I do not believe Alabama's that good. I think they talk a big game now because they won. I think Indiana just sort of methodically gets through this game. That's a 7-point game. Indiana, Alabama in the Rose Bowl. Alabama's just good enough that they can hang around. I'm not sold that that defense is all that great. I think Indiana, well, they're not, the scene's not going to be too big for them. We're not going to have an Oregon, Ohio State situation of last year. I think this is going to be a strong Indiana performance. It's not going to be definitive. It's not going to be any sort of blowout, but I think they just sort of like just boom, 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 boom. And all of a sudden they win by seven, you know, something like, you know, 27-16, something like that, where the Alabama kind of shows up, where you said the committee got it right. Yeah, okay, technically, yes, they won and Miami won. This is where it's going to be like, yeah, okay, Alabama probably wasn't the best team in this field, at least ranked where they were supposed to. Nothing scintillating. Indiana methodically pulls this out and covers.
I think the committee's absolved no matter what happens from now with Alabama and
yeah,
Miami.
Yeah, I mean, except for the James Madison Tulane thing, okay. But other than that,
that's by rule. Though,
Miami wasn't a wrong call. I mean, Alabama, the way they did it. Okay, yes. Fine. And Alabama certainly proved himself. But yeah, Miami was good enough. That was never the argument. And I think they could push through in this and they could win. I just think Ohio State's going to be better.
Like I said many times, weekly shows is the problem because you put someone to task and make them try to word salad their way into a justification every week, and that's why people lose their minds. Ole Miss Georgia is the one that closes it out, the Sugar Bowl. Georgia's only a 6.5-point favorite. Is that too low?
It feels trappy, doesn't it? I think so. I look, Pete Golding's good. They got their win that they needed to have. They kind of exercised the Lane Kiffin thing. I think that was the emotional release. Look, you know, Pete Golding has a college football playoff win and Lane Kiffin doesn't. All right. So, you know, Ole Miss is good. They've got the offense, but no, I think this is where Georgia shows up. Georgia still doesn't, we still don't quite know what Georgia's offense can do, but we do know that defense is tight enough. Again, it's unfortunate. I think this is going to be the worst of the three games by far. Georgia's defense shows up large in this. It's not going to be a coaching problem. Golding's going to be fine. The team's going to be fine. But they are a little banged up. Kewon Lacy hurt his shoulder. He should be fine. Chambliss got dinged a little bit, but he certainly was fine at the end of that Tulane game. I do think, though, that offense is not going to move like it did. Georgia wins. Again, it's kind of like the Indiana game, methodically, it's going to be on the defense. It's going to be a little more high scoring, but I think Georgia does cover in this.
ATS, I got Miami, Texas Tech, Indiana, and Georgia. That's how I'm going with it. Which sounds.
I've got one more for you.
Yes, before we go, your favorite bowl play. What is it?
Army, UConn. UConn lost everybody. They're going to start probably a fourth string quarterback. And as is, UConn was bad. Even when they're good, they did not control the time of possession battle. When we talk about opt-outs, we talk about transfer portal, what's the one team we know? Army's in place. Army's going to go Army, and they're going to hold the ball for like 59 minutes and 59 seconds in this game. I love Army in this game because you've got a team with everything in place and a team with nothing in place, which means it's probably going to blow up in my face. But Army is my play of this entire bowl season so far.
Army, a 9.5-point favorite against UConn this Saturday. This Saturday at the, the Fenway Bowl, right, in Boston?
Your Wasabi Fenway Bowl.
Oh, pardon me. You're correct. The Wasabi Fenway Bowl. My goodness. Thank you, Pete. Pete Butak from collegefootballnews.com. Jeff Erickson next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget to check out the Sharp Plays, sharpplays.com. Unmatched transparency with records updated daily. AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. Scan the QR code for more off your screen. Sharpplays.com. Check it out. Skill Alexander, Danny Higgins alongside him for Kelly Bidlin, who's on assignment in Florida. The assignment is hanging out with his niece on the couch. On that very Floridian couch he had in that picture. We get tweets to be in the book. Sam Ginsberg, our buddy from Pittsburgh, PA. He said, Rivers' 10 kids reminds me of Groucho Marx on the game show he hosted. He talked to a woman, female contestant with 12 kids, and he asked why so many kids. She said she loved her husband. He responded, quote, I don't want to say this one, quote, I love my cigar, but I take it out of my mouth every so often. That's what Groucho Marx said. Thank you, Sam Ginsberg, for that old school slapstick comedy. Derek Gwynn, oh, he's a big Southern Miss guy, says, listen to the show, Gil giving Southern Miss some love. He says Southern Miss 34, Western Kentucky 3. That's his score. All right, Derek Gwynn. A little homerism, but I get it right there. And then Parlay Pete, I never know what Parlay Pete is responding to, but here he says, Houston's defense ranks first in points allowed, 16.6 per game. Drake Mays had a stellar year, but this isn't the matchup you want early in the playoffs. Texans pass rush would be relentless. He's just looking at projected postseason potential matchups. Was seeding that we still have tons to determine with seeding. Because again, six teams in the AFC can still get the number one seed. But I will say it again, with 2 weeks left in the season, and again, having been on Earth and watching football for five decades, I do not remember a season ever where with 2 weeks left, it is so clear in terms of in and out. Only two things debated, still to be decided, I should say, in the NFC and AFC. That's the NFC South and the AFC North, right? Baltimore, Pittsburgh, the AFC North. Pittsburgh's magic number is one. NFC South, Carolina, and Tampa Bay, they both play each other week 18. Carolina's magic number is two. And then one wild card spot, Detroit versus Green Bay in the NFC. Green Bay has to lose out. Detroit has to win out for Detroit to overcome the Packers. And the same holds true in the AFC between the Texans and the Colts. Colts have to win out. Texans have to lose out. Richard Stand. Hi, friends. Down to just 13 of us left in my seven-figure survivor pool. So he's not in Circus Survivor, but he's in a seven-figure survivor pool. Said, thoughts on this week's picks, leaning Jacksonville, available to the fewest remaining players, Dallas or Pittsburgh. Thoughts appreciated. Again, without knowing availability and all that stuff, because we broke that down with Circus Survivor. I don't know which way to direct him on that. And then Billy Charlebois says, Bobby Petrino at UNC should work until he and Jordan Hudson carpool to practice together on his on his motorcycle. It's always a possibility. Jeff Erickson is kind enough to join us on this day before Christmas. He is a founder of RotoWire, and he is kind enough to join us here. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff with a J underscore Erickson, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Jeff, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Right back at you, Gil. Right back at you, Danny. Hopefully you have some fantasy irons in the fire, Danny. I know, Gil, you don't play anymore, but plenty of other ways to get your action.
Danny, Danny's the fantasy guy. You wanted to ask some fantasy questions as we head to championship week?
Yeah, so I'm out of fantasy. You know, unfortunately, did not make the cut this year. But with fantasy championships coming up this week for, you know, a lot of leagues, you know, with some of these key injuries that we had, you know, quarterback, running back, some receiver positions, is there anyone particular you're targeting, you know, on the waiver wire that can, you know, help you hopefully get that championship at the end of week 17 here?
Yeah, first of all, I'm really sweating. Like, I have a couple of different quarterback issues there. One, in my fantasy championship, I've got Josh Allen, and I'm sure he's going to play, but is he going to be compromised playing against Philly? It's not a great matchup there. It's a super flex league, so we start too. I have Allen and Burrow going, and I was thinking this is going to be a pretty fun week. For that, I'm also on that same team. I lost Travion Henderson on Sunday night. I also lost Quinshon Judkins for the last two games. So now I have to kind of scramble here and try to see if I have enough there. So I'm really sweating that position. I think Green Bay, a lot of people have Jordan Love or Lamar Jackson on the other side of that game. A lot of volatility in that game too. So I'm really kind of be watching that as very closely. I'm not sure if I'm picking up the replacements for those particular teams, but it's something there where I know I'm going to have to act.
Can I play sour fantasy guy? It feels like, and you'll tell me, maybe I'm just being ridiculous about this, but it feels like in the last couple years, the injuries to key players has been such that it sort of ruins fantasy football at the end. That you go this whole season, right? It's based on merit. And then you're so, the vagaries of who gets hurt and who doesn't is complete randomness, right, based on your fantasy teams. Has it taken away anything from your enjoyment of this the last couple seasons?
I think it happens everywhere. I think it happens in almost every sport. We add games to the schedule. We're now on a 17-game schedule, 18 weeks in the NFL, just one more chance to get hurt. In baseball, you know, it's a long grind of the season. It's which teams can get through okay. Look at the NBA last year. Look at all the key injuries that happened in the playoffs or just before the playoffs and how that really impacts the outcome there. For instance, Giannis getting hurt a couple of years ago for the Bucks, and how that, you know, he wasn't able to play in the playoffs as far as that goes. Does it affect me, you know, things a little bit? I'm used to it, but, you know, at the same time, I might not have had a beautiful team wrecked by an injury at the last moment there too. So I feel like it's like a video game. I'd love to be able to turn injuries off, but I know I just don't have that ability.
How many leagues are you still in your championship week? How many?
About five, I think. I got five, I think. Yeah, it is. I there There's one that's really a total points thing, so I count that as one of them there, but I have five irons in the fire.
And how many did you start with?
About 18.
Is that an acceptable percentage to you?
Yeah, to get to the final, yeah, it is. Yeah, I'd say making the playoffs, if I get about 75% into the playoffs, you know, you run a little randomness there. I had one of my best teams got knocked down the first round of the playoffs because I ran up against Trevor and his 6 total touchdowns against the Jets. What are you going to do?
Have you counted how many fantasy championships you've won collectively through the years?
I haven't. That's actually a great question. Probably should at some point in time.
Homework assignment.
Yeah,
Jeff.
It would require like digging into the archives though, and some because you know the records aren't readily available in some of these leagues.
All right, let's get to. Do you have any other fantasy questions?
No, I just wanted to see. You know, like with those injuries and everything. You know, what are some of the pickups on the waiver wire that people could have this week, especially you know being championship week. You know, slim to none with some of those waiver wire pickups. So thank you, Jeff.
Right, we're still kind of digging out some of the injury information there too to see what happens as far as that goes. But you know, one of the things is I'd be paying attention to like who's going to run the ball in Cleveland. I mean, it's not a great matchup against Pittsburgh, but you know, with Judkins out, maybe it and Dylan Sampson missed the game last week. They're down to like their fourth running back. I'm not sure if you want to go that way, but hey, I started Amir Abdullah on the Raiders last year in a championship game last year because of like 6 different injuries. So it happens. Jeez. You kind of have to dig deep sometimes. Just look at last week. Juwan Jordan for the Houston Texans had such a big game. We were hoping Jordan and Estime would both be able to contribute for us. Estime is a little disappointing. They gave the ball to Taysom Hill too much for the Saints. You know, you're seeking out matchups there. You're trying to see like, okay, do I start Ramondre Stevenson against the Jets if Travion Henderson is out? Absolutely. That's something that I'm really hoping I'll have that ability. Someone that might have been on my bench otherwise.
All right, let's get to week 17 in the NFL, and let's do this chronologically since we have 4 different days in which week 17 games occur, beginning obviously with Christmas Day, a trio of games, 3, forget backup quarterbacks, right? We're going down depth charts for 3 of these guys. We think Washington, Minnesota, certainly, also with the Kansas City Chiefs being the most obvious of those. What do you like, anything side or total, any of those 3 games?
So, yeah, the Detroit-Minnesota game is fascinating because Detroit straight up lost to Minnesota at home earlier this year. But we actually found a way for us to miss J.J. McCarthy if Brosmer has to play or if anybody else has to play for the Vikings. You know, somehow Detroit's already giving 6 on the road to Minnesota team that's got still a ferocious defense. A Brian Flores coach defense, they'd like nothing better than to knock the Lions out of the playoffs. So I think that's just a total fascinating game for me. Amon-Ra St. Brown also sat out yesterday, too. I think he'll play. I think it's just a maintenance day more than anything. But if he were to miss that game, that would obviously be a big deal there as well. But yeah, it's just hard to get behind any other quarterback other than McCarthy, who I really have a hard time getting behind to begin with there. But Minnesota at home has just been a really good team, and they're finding ways to pull out games.
The proverbial must-win situation for the Lions. They must win or they are done. Done. I asked this yesterday because Detroit played Washington in the playoffs last year, Washington famously beating them at Detroit in a 15-2 season for the Lions. And I the thought occurred to me, who had the more disappointing season? And I think I come down squarely on in terms of expectations, because I think people felt with Washington, you know, they won a lot of coin flip games last year. Jaden Daniels just pulling games out of the proverbial, you know what? It's got to be the Lions, right?
Yeah, and especially because the Lions, they're looking at this in terms of windows, right? Whereas Washington, oh, we have so many more years. We got Jaden Daniels in his second year. That, you know, it can be, you know, we know that doesn't always play out that way. But with Detroit, that was their best chance in this whole run. You know, they're going to have home field. You know, they had this great rocket ship of a team that just got torn asunder by defensive injuries. And it was just one too many bricks to fall out of the wall there. I had the Jenga tower there and it all collapsed. And it's hard to get back there. Dan Campbell talked about it even the year before when they lost in the NFC Championship game. It's hard to get there.
Jeff, extra points for torn asunder are granted to you. Torn asunder. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Let's talk some more week 17 on the other side. Yes?
Jeff, yes, sir.
Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander, Danny Higgins.
Danny.
And for Kelly Bidlin on this Tuesday morning, Christmas week. Hope everybody's having a happy holiday so far, a safe holiday, as we make the run-up to the most beautiful holiday of them all, Christmas Day. Just my opinion, as you know, an outsider. Just wanted to point that out. Who doesn't love Christmas? If you don't love Christmas, something's wrong with you. Jeff Erickson, kind enough to join us for a second segment, co-host of RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today on Sirius XM 87, RotoWire senior editor, and as I like to say, more than that, founder, co-founder of RotoWire back in the day. Jeff joins us now, courtesy again of the Progressive Guest Line. Jeff, we were just talking off air. I want to set this up for folks before we get into some more of your Week 17 thoughts. But one of my pet peeves is when I am curious to find out reasons for things. This is a great time of year to bring this up because with tiebreakers, not so much this year. This year it's very clear. But when it comes to seeding, right, in the NFL this year, it will also come up where it's like, okay, why does this team have a tiebreaker over this team? And oftentimes you can search 20 minutes trying to find an article that actually explains to you, oh, it's common opponents. Oh, it's strength of victory, that kind of thing. And it drives me nuts. And something came up because you just off air brought up the fact that you just spent Christmas, the days before Christmas with your dad in Kansas. This stuff about the Chiefs now moving from Missouri to Kansas. The whole time I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, but are they moving from Kansas City, Missouri to Kansas City, Kansas? Why isn't anybody specifying where in Kansas they're moving to? Can you provide me with that insight?
I can't yet. I don't know where they're going to build the new stadium. It could be KCK, could be one of the many suburbs there. You know, it's the thing about Kansas City is it's just kind of one contiguous city, split by a state line. And so it really is kind of like this whole, it's not like Dallas and Fort Worth, you know, I know there's separate postal addresses and all that, but it's just one big city.
Yes.
It just straddles the state line. So not quite sure where they're going to build it yet, but it is fascinating.
That's why it was driving me crazy yesterday, because I remember going to Kansas City and knowing what you just said. It's really just one large city. There just happens to be a state line between. So if they were making a big deal about this, but they were just moving to Kansas City, Kansas, I'm sitting there be like, well, this is not a story, right, if that's the case. It's a minimal story if that's the case, but no one really could provide me with that detail. What was the one that you were just talking about off air that drove you crazy? Was it Duke, you said?
Duke making the ACC championship game. And it took me a really long time to find the information because it wasn't in any story. Like, okay, yes, they won the tiebreaker. How? You know, it certainly isn't strength of schedule. It certainly isn't because they had the best win. It's certainly not head to head. It just took me forever to figure that out. And I like figuring that sort of stuff out.
Me too.
I don't mind going down a rabbit hole.
Me too.
Or two, but
it drives me crazy that people who are tasked with an article about said subject are not intellectually curious enough to dig that one more level deeper to provide that information. Anyway, this is maybe it's our thing. But that stuff drives me nuts. I'll tell you what else drives Jeff Erickson nuts, everybody. NFL scheduling. What do you have to say about this for Week 17?
There are two games in the late afternoon window on Sunday. And it's because we have three games on Christmas and two more on Saturday. I understand why. But I need at least three games going on the two Sunday windows. It's got to be that case there. I need that. Just put like a random like Jacksonville at Indy, put that in the late window, right? But they don't want to go up against Philly Buffalo. I get it. It's America's game of the week, or, you know, of the century, of the month, or whatever it is. But I get why they're doing that, but just it makes it a much less pleasurable viewing experience for me.
Giants Raiders doesn't do it for you, huh? No.
It's going to be so funny to see all the Ashton Gentry fantasy managers watching him win their hypothetical championship as he goes off with them out of the playoffs there. I actually went up against somebody in a semifinal where someone benched Gentry, and they should have, at Houston. It was a miserable matchup, and he goes off in that
game.
It just shows what talent he has, but it's so frustrating.
Best game of his young career, I would say.
Yep.
We talked about a game on Thanksgiving, the Lions and the Vikings. Let's go to Saturday. Big game, right? Now, if the Lions lose on Thursday, this doesn't become a big game for the Packers. But it will be a big game either way, either both for the Packers and the Ravens, but at least for the Ravens, again, both of these teams with the Packers' magic number is one to get into the playoffs. The Ravens' magic number, I guess the Steelers' magic number is one for the Ravens to be bounced for the playoffs. So Baltimore-Green Bay And we don't know about the quarterbacks, right?
Exactly. Lamar Jackson missed the second half with a severe back contusion, aka bruise, but still, it's you missed an entire half of a very meaningful game. So who's to say he's going to be able to rally with one less, short rest again here too. Going from Sunday night to a Saturday game there, it's really kind of tough for him to turn it around. At least Jordan Love played on Saturday. He has that, a week to recover, a regular week to recover from his concussion, which we don't know if he's going to be able to return from. Meanwhile, Malik Willis has a sore shoulder too for Green Bay. So there's so many different moving parts here. Might have a Josh Johnson situation here in Green Bay as well. It's possible, especially if Detroit loses. If Detroit loses, then Green Bay can say, like, hey, we're just going to get everybody healthy here. It's not an ideal way to go about doing it there, but it could happen that way.
All right, let's go to this is also Saturday. Pardon me. So the other game on Saturday, Texans-Chargers, which is a huge game. Again, Texans' magic number to get in against the Colts is one. One Colts loss, one Texans win gets the Texans in the playoffs. Texans also have designs on more, though. They're still looking up to try to win the division in the AFC. I believe they're still involved in the number one seed discussion, or are they out of the number one? They might be out of the... No, maybe they are mathematically still alive. They're one of the six. The Chargers certainly are one of the six that is mathematically alive for a number one seed. They're looking up as a possible AFC West title as well. The Broncos are still in their midst. Chargers are 2-point favorites, and I've been the one saying this for a while now. I feel like, Jeff, that I am higher on the Chargers than most. As much publicity as the Texans get defensively, and justifiably so, I feel like the Chargers defense, while not as talented necessarily, is as disciplined as any. I don't know how you feel about this.
We were
game.
In lockstep last week against Chargers in Dallas. Remember, we were simpatico on that one there. In fact, I think we both said the money line, in fact. So that was lovely for us. I agree. Their defense is playing as well as anybody in football right now. And as good as Houston's played lately, their offensive line still isn't, a fully finished product. Their offense as a whole, I still feel, is a little shaky. Then again, so is the Chargers offensive line. It's still a problem there. They're down to like their fourth or fifth tackle. They had lost another one against Dallas. So that's kind of scary against Will Anderson, against Danielle Hunter, and all the Houston defense there. One thing to note, though, Houston lost their one of their defensive tackles the week before, and we saw Gentry run wild against them. I think that does matter on the run defense. So I think Omarion Hampton's going to be a very big key in this game. If they can get him unlocked, I think that solves some of the issues there for the Chargers, because Herbert can buy you some time. He's magical. He's amazing. And against Houston, it's not a great matchup for him, but he's been able to overcome some other really bad situations before too. So, and meanwhile, the Chargers have a chance to beat Denver for the AFC West. Remember, they hold every tiebreaker there. They're 5-0 in division. They play Denver next week at Mile High. So that's a huge, huge matchup coming up there for them, if they can get through this one too.
I got the Chargers again this week. Made it during guessing lines yesterday. I'm also on the Panthers again this week, like I was last week, and added the Niners against the Bears. Niners minus three.
I like that one.
You like the Niners?
I like
one
that
well.
One a lot. I set that one at 4.5 personally.
Yeah, I did. I had over three. I can't remember what my guess was exactly, but it was more than three on that one. Sight unseen, without that, without the Niners having played yet yesterday.
Your guess on that one was four.
Four. Yeah. Four was my guess. So yeah, we were very simpatico on that. This is okay. Before you go, and this is not a question that we usually ask on a network like this or on a show like this. It's usually what we ask each other when we're around sort of non-betting friends, which is the simplest question of all. But I think it's the most fascinating this year because it's the most up in the air. If I said to you right now, Jeff, who's in the Super Bowl? That simple of a question. Who? What's your answer?
It's not simple at all. I think the fact that I don't have a snap call for you, it just tells you there. I do a bet with my friend Chris Liss, who used to host the show with me on the RotoWire show, and he chooses four teams, and I get the field every year. And this is the best year to have the field.
Yes.
And we have to do it. We do it like around the start of December. Last year it was pretty easy. There were certain teams. I'm going to say New England.
Wow.
In the AFC side, I think they get the revenge against the Bills somehow. I don't know if we can make it work in terms of the matchups and the seeding and how that works out. But I think New England gets through in the AFC, and it's like that. It's not a strong opinion either, but and then Rams. I think Rams Seattle is the stronger, or the winner of those two teams. I mean, I think it's the Rams are the best team in football, but they might have to go on the road throughout the playoffs is the problem.
I don't know how I'd answer it at this point. For me, it's Rams Chargers or Niners Chargers. I think it's an all California Super Bowl. At least that's how I feel right at this moment. Jeff, appreciate it. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, man. Thank you so much.
Right back at you, Gil. Right back at you, Danny. Thank you.
Jeff Erickson, everybody. At Jeff with a J, Jeff_Erickson on Twitter. RotoWire co-founder. Carl Sack, NBA and NFL. Some college football, too, with him next.